The Apostle Paul wrote words that have haunted and fascinated and beguiled the human race for 2,000 years. And now, this is a little passage I could not leave without reflecting on these words and offer them not as a chance for you to shine, but for them to shine in you. Paul said, "For me, to live is Christ, to die is gain." But we live in a much more secular age where believing deeply, easily, that death is gain, that it is a doorway, it's a portal to a greater life, that there is something beyond the grave, is harder for us than it was 2,000 years ago. Vast majority of human beings have always believed that, but it comes tougher in our day. And many people kind of wonder, is there another way for me to hold on to my faith if I'm not sure? And there is. And I want to read to you words that are very inspiring to me and let them shine in you. I will sometimes think about the mystery of death and how God has decided that there are some things that we don't know for sure. And how the smartest person who has ever lived knows less for sure about what happens after you die than the simplest person 5 seconds after they have died. And I've been thinking about this. I have a friend, Ken, who we were together very early on when I was in ministry, and he just recently passed away. And my first boss, my friend John Anderson, part of why I went into ministry, one of the most fun and joyful people that I know, his wife, Barb, they were like a home away from home for me when I first left Rockford and came out to California to go to school and to learn how to work at a church. And Barb just passed away. And I'll think, now Kenny knows. Now Barb knows. And one day you and I will, but we have to live on this side. And what if you're not certain? So this is from C.S. Lewis's The Narnia Chronicles in the episode that's called The Silver Chair. There is a wicked queen, and she has enchanted a little group of heroes, including a wonderful character named Puddle Glum. He looks real negative. He looks like Debbie Downer. Eeyore turns out to be unbelievably courageous and an absolute rock. You just love this character. He just keeps going. He cannot be stopped. And when the queen is trying to enchant them and to convince them that nothing besides her little underground cave is real. There is no sun. There is no Narnia. There is no Aslan. There is no reality beyond this. I won't take the time to read them, but in one of the most read essays of the 20th century, Bertrand Russell writes about the universe kind of in that way, as blind and pitiless. It lies beyond good and evil. We are powerless in its grip. There is a kind of enchantment. There is a kind of spell. There is a kind of message that says there is nothing. And for a while, they fall under that spell. And they, like we do sometimes, find it difficult to believe. Is there really anything? Is that story that came to us in this old, old book about a carpenter who was somehow from heaven, who somehow conquered death, is it real? Is it true? What if it's not? What if it's all a fairy tale? What if it's all make-believe? And part of how she has that enchantment going is she has this kind of incense that goes into a fire and it's smoke. It's the air that they breathe, doubt and skepticism. When all seems lost, Puddle Glum, he is a marsh wiggle, frog-like figure, breaks it by stomping on the fire in the fireplace, which was the original source of the enchantment. And the pain of his foot brings him clarity of thought. And here's what he says. "One word, ma'am," he said, coming back from the fire, limping because of the pain. "One word. All you've been saying is quite right. I shouldn't wonder. I'm a chap who always liked to know the worst and then put the best face on it I can. So I won't deny any of what you said. But there is one more thing to be said even so. Suppose we have only dreamed or made up all these things, trees and grass and sun and moon and stars and Aslan himself." Aslan is the great Christ figure in this book. "Suppose we have. Then all I can say is that in that case, the made-up things seem a good deal more important than the real ones. Suppose this black pit of a kingdom of yours is the only world. Well, it strikes me as a pretty poor one. And that's a funny thing when you come to think of it. We're just babies making up a game, if you're right. But four babies making up playing a game can make a play world that licks your real world hollow. That's why I'm going to stand by the play world. I'm on Aslan's side, even if there isn't any Aslan to lead it. I am going to live as like a Narnian as I can, even if there isn't any Narnia. So, thank you kindly for our supper. If these two gentlemen and the young lady are ready, we're leaving your court at once and setting out in the dark to spend our lives looking for overland. Not that our lives will be very long, I should think. But that's a small loss if the world's as dull a place as you say. J.R.R. Tolkien said that one of the reasons that he wrote The Lord of the Rings was to illustrate in a narrative fashion the fusion, the combination of Northern courage, Icelandic sagas, and North mythology and Christian faith. In those Northern stories, Odin and the gods and the heroes all fight, but unlike the great battle of Armageddon in scripture, in the Northern version of the story, they are on the side that loses, not the side that wins, but they know that it is the right side, and so they fight for that side to the very end. In George MacDonald's book, Thomas Wingfold Curate, it's the story of a pastor who comes to realize that he doesn't know what he believes and he has all kinds of doubts. And so he sets out simply to do what Jesus said to do, just to sincerely try to do what Jesus said to do. And he becomes increasingly confident that Jesus is with him and that Jesus really knew the best way to live. Towards the end of the book, somebody asks him, do you still think of giving up your pastorate, your curacy? And here's what he said. I've almost forgotten I ever thought of such a thing. Whatever energies I may or may not have, I know one thing for certain, that I could not devote them to anything else I should think entirely worth doing. Indeed, nothing else seems interesting enough, nothing to repay the labor, but the telling of my fellow men about the one man who is the truth and to know whom is the life, even if there be no hereafter. I would live my time believing in a grand thing that ought to be true if it is not. No facts can take the place of truths. And if these be not truths, then is the loftiest part of our nature a waste. Let me hold by the better than the actual, and fall into nothingness off the same precipice with Jesus and John and Paul and 1,000 more who were lovely in their lives and with their death made even the nothingness into which they passed like the garden of the Lord. I will go farther and say I would rather die forevermore believing as Jesus believed than live forevermore believing in those that, as those that deny him. If there be no God, I feel assured that this existence is and could be but a chaos of contradictions, whence can emerge nothing worthy to be called a truth, nothing worth living for. No, I will not give up my curacy. I will teach that which is good, even if there should be no God to make a fact of it. And I will spend my life on it, in the growing hope, which may become assurance, that there is indeed a perfect God, worthy of being the Father of Jesus Christ, and that it was because they are true that these things were lovely to me and to so many men and women, of whom some have died for them, and some would yet be ready to die. So, that's the shining word. For me, to live is Christ. And I will stand with him, even if I have doubts, even if I have questions, until one day I might stand with the Apostle Paul, and to die is gain. One day we will know. One day we will know. This much I do know. There is no other way worth living. There is no other one worth following. There is no other gospel worth devoting my life to. There is no other method for living that is worthy of a human being. And so we follow that way. Now, to net this out, like, what does it mean? What's it means is we go into the battle, even if you're not sure how it'll turn out, even in this world, let alone in the next world, we go to the battle. You're a parent. Seek to love your child, even if your heart is breaking. You have work to do. Bring good into the world, even if it's really difficult to keep going. Even if you battle deep depression, even if you battle deep anxiety, even if you have lost something that really seems like it matters, even if you have a dream in which you have been deeply disappointed, even if you feel alone or isolated or like you have gone through loss or grief, other great ones have come before us. Other great ones will come after us. This is our day. This is our chance to shine. There is a great battle. I will stand with him. Let's shine.